The New York City Legionnaires' disease outbreak has now killed 3 people, with the deaths occurring on 3 consecutive days in an Upper East Side cluster. Officials say new case rates are declining, which is the indicator that suggests containment efforts are working. Legionnaires spreads through water systems, cooling towers, hot water tanks, and decorative fountains, not person to person. The Upper East Side cluster points investigators toward a specific building or set of buildings in that neighborhood. 3 deaths over 3 days is a serious outcome, but the declining new case rate is genuinely reassuring if it holds through this week.
The World Cup final story has several threads worth pulling on. Trump attended the match, which hosted the final in the United States, a significant diplomatic and sporting achievement that the administration has been keen to claim credit for, and used the occasion for a bilateral conversation with Canadian Prime Minister Carney about wildfire smoke. There's something almost absurdist about conducting cross-border environmental diplomacy at a soccer match while simultaneously in a tariff dispute, but that's the current diplomatic environment. The Blue Angels' flyover admission that a flyover maneuver was a miscalculated turn adds a mildly alarming footnote to what was presumably a spectacular event.
The prediction market story is genuinely significant for the sports betting industry. Platforms like Kalshi captured 27% of all legal U.S. sports betting volume during the World Cup, up from 9% at the start of 2026. That's a tripling of market share in roughly 6 months, which is an extraordinary rate of displacement. Traditional sportsbooks built significant legislative and regulatory infrastructure to achieve their current market position, and they are going to push back hard against prediction platform competition. The WSJ's White House insider betting story adds a regulatory dimension that could complicate the prediction market's expansion.
The Mets. A pitch calling allegation is a story at the intersection of sports and technology that the baseball world is watching very carefully. The Mets are claiming full compliance with league rules, but the allegation is that they used AI to make real-time pitch calling decisions from the dugout, which would violate MLB's limits on electronic sign communication. Baseball has been grappling with technology-assisted cheating since the 2017 Astros scandal, and each new iteration pushes the sport's regulatory framework to its limits. The irony of a team simultaneously claiming full compliance and not denying that AI tools were involved is a posture worth noting.
The Vance is welcoming a baby. The first child born to a sitting vice president in 156 years is a genuine historical footnote. The last VP to have a child in office was Thomas Hendricks in 1870. And that context alone gives the story a kind of serendipitous distinction that cuts through the news cycle in a way that's worth acknowledging.
Now, here's where I want to apply some genuine scrutiny to one of the dominant narratives of the past 9 days, because I think it deserves it. The consensus view, held widely in Washington, in most analytical commentary, and frankly in our own earlier analysis today, is that Iran's position is deteriorating and that the U.S. military campaign is achieving its intended pressure effect. The evidence cited: Iran firing more missiles than it can monthly produce, Khamenei's death creating leadership instability, and the halting diplomatic signals suggesting Iran wants a way out.
And this is exactly the moment to ask, what if that consensus is wrong? Let me play out the counterargument seriously. First, the missile expenditure rate could reflect a deliberate Iranian strategy rather than desperation. If Iran calculates that exhausting U.S. Patriot interceptor inventories serves its medium-term deterrence goals, then firing at a rate above replacement isn't a sign of weakness. It's a tactical choice. The U.S. BEL has real production constraints on interceptor missiles, too.
Second, the assumption that leadership instability in Iran translates into a more pliable negotiating partner has a poor historical track record. After Soleimani's assassination in 2020, Iran's decision-making became more opaque and more risk-tolerant, not more accommodating. Leadership vacuums in revolutionary systems often produce hardliners consolidating power, not moderates reaching for off-ramps. The security breach that Iran says still exists in their own systems is as likely to produce a domestic crackdown as a diplomatic opening.
Third, and this is the one that I find most underexamined, The administration's theory of victory appears to require Iran to negotiate while under attack, something Iran has explicitly said it won't do. Khamenei called the interim deal's signature worthless and invalid. If Iran's hardliners use the U.S. campaign as proof that concessions invite escalation, the pressure model could actually strengthen the anti-negotiation faction rather than empower diplomats.
So what do we watch for as the signal that the consensus narrative is wrong? Three concrete indicators. First, watch Kuwait. If Iran actually moves toward any ground force positioning near Kuwait, the deterrence model is failing, not succeeding. Second, watch Patriot interceptor resupply timelines. If the Pentagon requests emergency appropriations for missile defense stocks, that's a signal the attrition math isn't favorable. Third, watch who speaks for Iran diplomatically. If the negotiators who were engaging on the interim deal are replaced by IRGC figures, the softer factions have lost the internal argument. Those three signals, within the next 2 weeks, would tell us the consensus got this wrong.